is the policy evaluation lead within the Waterborne Diseases Unit at the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, and she'll be giving us a different perspective on cooling towers and Legionnaires.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm really excited to be here today to present some analysis we did recently looking at neighborhood associations between cooling tower density and Legionnaires' disease incidence in New York City. So as my previous presenters went through all these background slides, I knew you guys are all experts on what Legionnaires' disease is and what cooling towers are, but I'll just give a few points. So Legionnaires' disease is a severe form of pneumonia that's caused by the Legionella pneumophila bacteria. It is the leading cause of waterborne disease outbreaks in the United States, and there are about 5,000 cases reported annually each year. In New York City, we have about 250 to 300 cases, and we've seen a significant increase in cases since 2000, so about 378% increase in cases. As with everywhere else, Legionnaires' disease is seasonal. Most of our cases occur between April and November, and older persons and persons living in poverty are at highest risk. From our 2016 data, the average age at diagnosis was 64, and 50% of persons who were diagnosed lived in high or very high poverty areas. And as noted by the previous presentation, the great majority of our cases have unknown exposure source. So the majority of our cases are not nosocomial, and there's no outbreak relation. Something else that New York City is known for is that we had the second largest outbreak of community-acquired Legionnaires' disease in U.S. history, and that was the South Bronx outbreak, which occurred in the summer of 2015. So again, this was the largest outbreak in New York City with 138 cases and 16 deaths. And if you're not familiar with our great city of New York, these are the five boroughs or the five counties. And the South Bronx outbreak occurred in the area that was the southernmost tip of the Bronx. It's a very vulnerable area in terms of economics. Historically, it's been very poor, and currently more than 44% of the population lives below the federal poverty line. Another interesting thing about this outbreak is that it garnered a lot of attention locally and nationally. We had, of course, the local press, but we had press as far as the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times. So a lot of attention was placed on this outbreak. And something that's also different about this outbreak is we did have a definitive source, and the source was a cooling tower above the Opera House Hotel, which is pictured at the bottom. So all of these things together, the size of the outbreak, the fact that it was in a very marginalized community, and the fact that we could definitively say, okay, it was this cooling tower that did it, was really kind of the perfect storm that led public officials and the community to push for legislation of cooling towers. And that led to the enactment of the first in the nation cooling tower legislation. So this legislation came in two parts. The first part was passed in August of 2015, which was right after the outbreak, and it was called Local Law 77. And there were two mandates of this piece of legislation. The first was it required all cooling tower owners to register their cooling towers with the city. And the second piece was that it mandated all cooling tower owners to maintain their towers based on rules set forth by the city. A second piece of legislation came about 9 months later. And these were the rules that were discussed in the first piece of legislation. So this second piece was where we laid out, this is exactly what you need to do as a cooling tower owner to maintain your towers. So essentially what was required was each cooling tower needed a maintenance plan, which said, this is what we're going to do, this is who's responsible for all of these things, and this is how we're going to report any abnormalities in the towers. They needed to conduct regular heterotrophic plate count testing, which essentially tests for the presence of biologic material in the towers. And they needed to test every 90 days for the presence of Legionella and report if they had any exceedance measurements detected. So at this point, So the goals of this legislation were to improve the condition of the towers. So to improve the condition of the towers, thus reducing the potential that Legionella would grow. And another awesome thing about this legislation was that we did have the registry, which significantly improved our capacity at finding cooling towers. in the occurrence of a cluster or outbreak. So at this point, we know that cooling towers can cause disease because they caused the South Bronx outbreak, and other jurisdictions have also seen that cooling towers can cause disease. But what we didn't know was, overall, kind of what is the impact of cooling towers on Legionnaires' disease in New York City? So 90% of our cases are of unknown source, they're sporadic. How much of that can we kind of attribute to cooling towers? So the aim of our study was to examine the association between Legionnaires' disease rates and cooling tower density in New York City. And that's a lovely picture of, hopefully, a cooling tower without Legionella kind of wafting across the city. So our study population were confirmed cases that were diagnosed from 2013 to 2016. Since we were looking mainly at sporadic cases, we excluded, sporadic community-acquired cases. We excluded nosocomial cases and cases that occurred during the South Bronx outbreak. For our cooling tower universe, we used all cooling towers that were registered as of December 12, 2016. This was a spatial analysis, so our geographic unit of analysis was the neighborhood tabulation area, and this is a New York City-specific unit of analysis, and it was created by aggregating entire census tracts, and we were trying to find a unit of analysis that was larger than a census tract because oftentimes cooling tower mist can drift over multiple census tracts, but wasn't quite as big as a community district. So there are 195 neighborhood tabulation areas in New York City. 189 of those are populated, and those are the ones that were included in our analysis. So our outcome measure was Legionnaires' disease counts, and our exposure of interest was cooling tower density, and we calculated cooling tower density by looking at the number of cooling towers per square mile within each neighborhood tabulation area. Upon looking at that distribution, we saw that there were natural breaks, so we broke it into a three-level variable using the natural breaks. Since we know that both age and poverty are associated with Legionnaires' disease, we included those in the model as covariates, and age was a six-level categorical, and neighborhood poverty was defined as the percent of residents living below the federal poverty line, and that information was from the American Community Survey. So over our study period, we had 1,003 confirmed cases of Legionnaires' disease, and 6,087 cooling towers were registered across the city. Looking at cooling tower density, we found that the great majority of the neighborhood tabulation areas had low cooling tower density. So 69% of the NTAs had density of less than 14 cooling towers per square mile. 16% had medium cooling tower density, which was 14.1 to 48 cooling towers per square mile, and only 8% fell in that high cooling tower density category, which was more than 48.4 cooling towers per square mile. We also saw that poverty was associated with both age-adjusted disease and cooling tower density. So we calculated age-adjusted incidence over that time period. And looking at this graph, what we saw was, if you look along the bottom, those are the categories of poverty from low to very high. And the red line reflects age-adjusted incidence. And you can see very clearly that in the lowest poverty areas, the age-adjusted incidence is the lowest, 6 per 100,000 persons, and it increases to the highest in the very high poverty areas. We saw the complete opposite when looking at cooling tower density. So that is the blue line. So the blue line represents mean cooling tower density by NTA. And so in the lowest poverty areas, the cooling tower density was 82.8 cooling towers per square mile. And that's compared to the very high poverty areas where the cooling tower density was only 10. So definitely the majority of cooling towers are in the low poverty areas. This shows the distribution of cooling towers across the city. And as you can see, or the darker colors represent higher cooling tower density. And as you can see, they're not evenly distributed across the city. If you can remember, this is Manhattan, and very clearly the majority of cooling towers and the high density cooling towers are in Manhattan. There's a lot of high rises, business districts, and that's really where the majority of our cooling towers are. But there are different pockets of cooling towers throughout the city. If you look into Queens and the Bronx, and a little bit in Brooklyn. And I just put this map up, which is the percent of population living below the federal poverty line, just to show again that where you see the majority of cooling towers in the first map is not where you see high poverty in the second map. This map is age-adjusted Legionnaires' disease incidence from 2013 to 2016, and the darker colors, again, represent higher incidence. And you can see that there are certain pockets where the incidence is higher, up near the South Bronx, and this is after excluding the South Bronx outbreak, so up near the South Bronx and lower Manhattan a little bit. And if you look at the same poverty map, you can see that while it's not a direct kind of overlap, there are certain pockets that you can see overlap in the two maps. So for our analysis, we conducted a negative binomial regression to determine the association between cooling tower density and Legionnaires' disease. Our outcome was Legionnaires' disease counts, and we included an offset term, which is the age-specific NTA population, in order to interpret the result as a rate. Again, the exposure of interest was cooling tower density, and our covariates were age and NTA population. Since the unit of analysis was geographic, and since the assumption of regression is that each unit is independent, we had to test to ensure that the unit of analysis was independent. Since they're neighborhoods, they touch each other, you know, they often share a lot of the same characteristics, we decided to assess to see if there was significant spatial autocorrelation between the neighborhoods. We did find that there was significant autocorrelation, and therefore we adjusted for that in both our bivariate and adjusted analyses. So this table shows the results of the bivariate analysis. And so looking at cooling tower density, we did find there was a significant association between the highest cooling tower density neighborhoods and Legionnaires' disease when compared to the lowest cooling tower density neighborhoods. Looking at poverty and Legionnaires' disease, we found in the bivariate analysis, we found that there was only an association between very high poverty neighborhoods and the reference group of low poverty neighborhoods. And there was a significant association at pretty much all levels of age, as we expected. In the adjusted analysis, for cooling tower density, after adjusting for poverty and age, the significant association between cooling tower density and Legionnaires' disease held. So compared to the lowest cooling tower density NTAs, those with the highest cooling tower density NTAs had nearly two times the risk. Interestingly, after adjusting for age, we see a very strong association between poverty and Legionnaires' disease at all levels, and the association between age and Legionnaires' disease stayed pretty much the same. So there are a number of limitations to this analysis. One is that there was potential underreporting of cooling towers in high poverty areas. So as I mentioned before, there is a legal requirement to register your cooling towers, but Class A buildings, buildings that have water management companies, and buildings that, you know, may be more abreast of this kind of legislation may have been more apt to register their towers. Building owners of smaller buildings or smaller businesses may have not known about the legislation or may have been late to register. And we've also heard that in certain immigrant communities, there was just a decision made among the building owners that they weren't going to register their cooling towers because they didn't want to be subject to the legislation. And so since the time of this analysis, over 200 additional towers have been found. So we're constantly in the process of finding new towers. The second limitation is that the cases were assigned to the neighborhood of their home address. And so this didn't account for travel into different areas or work in different areas. And as we know, business districts often have the most cooling towers. So we didn't account for travel into high cooling tower areas in this analysis. And third, as was mentioned in the previous presentations, comorbidities play a large role in who becomes infected with Legionnaires' disease. So we were unable to adjust for underlying comorbidities because we didn't have a spatially based measurement of that at our disposal. So in summary, this analysis found that there was a significant association between increasing cooling tower density and Legionnaires' disease after adjusting for age and poverty. And we really feel that this type of analysis provides additional kind of analytic support to the fact that cooling towers are an important exposure source, and are a valid focus for Legionnaires' disease, and cooling towers are a valid focus for Legionnaires' disease prevention legislation. So for our next steps, one of the things that I'm really excited to do is to include some cooling tower factors in this analysis. We do about 6,000 cooling tower inspections each year, and there's 400 plus questions on those inspections, so just like an incredible wealth of knowledge is being gathered on these inspections about cooling towers, maintenance, size, age, everything that was mentioned in the previous presentation. So I'm really excited to see, is it all cooling towers that are associated with disease, or is it particularly older ones or bigger ones or smaller ones? So that's one of our next steps. And secondly, we want to assess whether or not there's any difference in this association between neighborhoods. So I want to acknowledge all of my colleagues in the Bureau of Communicable Disease, Environmental Sciences and Engineering, our CDC partners, and the Bureau of Epi. Thank you.
Hello again.
Hi.
I have a question.
Okay.
So from the results, it seems like the greater the cooling tower density, the greater the risk.
Mm-hmm.
The higher the poverty, the greater the risk. But the higher the poverty, the lower the cooling tower density.
Right.
So could you kind of like unpack that?
Yes.
Or it kind of makes some sort of hypothesis.
I'm looking at Bruce because I've been having an internal crisis about that question since I did this analysis. So yes, that is true. That the majority of the cooling towers are in the low poverty areas and the majority of the disease is in the high poverty areas. But one of the things that's interesting to note is that we're seeing this association in the areas that have a lot of cooling towers. So the communities that you would think are least vulnerable are the low poverty areas. But we're seeing this significant association in those areas. So to me, that was kind of telling to say cooling towers may not be kind of the sole source. They might not be reflective of what's causing all of the disease, but they're definitely a source of disease, especially if you're looking at populations that may not have those underlying medical or underlying comorbidities because they're wealthier. So that was one thing. And the second thing is in the populations that are more vulnerable may be affected even though there's lower cooling tower density because of the population vulnerability. So those are the things that we've come up with since I did this analysis, but it is kind of a conundrum.
Continue that question since we're on that train of thought.
Sure.
I didn't quite catch, when you did the model to predict the rates using the cooling tower, did you control for poverty in the model?
Yeah.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
And you used a binary variable. Did you go very high versus the three
yeah,
low levels?
Yeah, it was a four-level variable.
It was a four-level mm-hmm. variable. Okay, so yeah. That's just another way to explain your question. She was comparing areas that had the same level of poverty and still finding a difference
right.
based on CT. So, thank you.
No, but that's a really great idea. You should definitely look into that because that's something that was really missing from the analysis is being able to characterize the different neighborhoods in terms of population disability. So that's definitely something we'd like to do.
So wonderful presentation. Thank you very much. I have a question pertaining to the exclusion of your cases that mm-hmm. you excluded from your analysis. You stated the Bronx outbreak. You also mm-hmm. stated the nosocomial cases. What percentage of your cases were interviewed? Were all your cases interviewed? And the ones that weren't interviewed, were they excluded or were they included?
All of our cases are interviewed.
Okay. And then the other question was, any travel-related cases, they were also included, depending on even if they were in their incubation period the entire time? Or were they?
We did not include travel-related cases, no.
You did not? Okay.
No.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd also like to open it up to any of the presenters now if you guys have questions that you weren't able to ask then.
Going twice? Okay, I think we're going to end early then. Have a good afternoon. Evening, I mean.